On his fifth day of December 2011 in San Diego, we're reading from the Srimad Bhagavad Gita as it is, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Chapter 6, Dhyana Yoga, texts 11 and 12. Shuchau deshe pratishtapya stidamasanamatmanaha natyutritam nati nicham chailajinakushotaram tatraikagrammanakritva yatachittendriya kriyaha Bhavishyasane yunjad yogam atma vishuddhaye. Translation. To practice yoga, one should go to a secluded place and should lay kusha grass on the ground and then cover it with a deer skin and a soft cloth. The seat should be neither too high nor too low and should be situated in a sacred place. The yogi should then sit on it very firmly and practice yoga to purify the heart by controlling his mind, senses, and activities, and fixing the mind on one point. Purport. Sacred place refers to places of pilgrimage. In India, the yogis, the transcendentalists or the devotees, all leave home and reside in sacred places such as Prayag, Mathura, Vrindavan, Rishikesh, and Hardwar, and in solitude practice yoga there where the sacred rivers like the Yamuna and the Ganges flow. But often this is not possible, especially for Westerners. The so-called yoga societies in big cities may be successful in earning material benefit, but they are not at all suitable for the actual practice of yoga. And here, Prabhupada is referring to Ashtanga yoga, meditative yoga. One who is not self-controlled and whose mind is not undisturbed cannot practice meditation. Therefore, in the Brihant Naradiya Puran, it is stated that in Kali Yuga, the present Yuga or age, when people in general are short-lived, slow in spiritual realization, and always disturbed by various anxieties, the best means of spiritual realization is chanting the holy name of the Lord. Hare Nama, Hare Nama, Hare Nama Iva Kevalam, Kalau Nasjeva, Nasjeva, Nasjeva Gatit Anyata. In this age of quarrel and hypocrisy, the only means of deliverance is chanting the holy name of the Lord. There is no other way, there is no other way, there is no other way. Om Ajnanatimanandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshu Unmilitam Mena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance, and I spirit to Master Srila Prabhupada. Open my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisance to him and all members of Sri Parampara. So, in this chapter, Krishna is giving us a little summary of the practice of Ashtanga Yoga. Ashtanga Yoga refers to eight limbs. Eight limbs are the Yama, Niyama, Asana, Pranayama, Pratyahara, Dharana, Dhyana, and Samadhi. So each of them, they're progressive. You can't really jump up to the concentration and meditation before you're at the stage of Yama, Niyama, and Asana, you know, and the other stages also. So Yama and Niyama are the don'ts and the do's, Prabhupada's famous rules and regulations. That's the Yama and Niyama. And all of these elements actually are there in Bhakti Yoga. Maybe not so obviously, but certainly Yama and Niyama are there. You know, the basic rules of self-control and morality have to be there in order to practice any kind of process of self-realization. And that's why Krishna says in the third chapter there, Tasmat Tvam Inyan Yado Niyamya Bharatarshaba. Niyamya, this very word Niyamya is used, like Yama Niyam. Therefore, in the beginning, Arjuna, you have to control the senses and conquer this enemy of lust, which covers your knowledge, which is the all-devouring sinful enemy of everyone, including the transcendentalists. So this chapter gives us some very nice instructions on especially on the need to control the mind and how the mind is working. Previously, we had this verse, One should not degrade oneself by the mind. One should uplift itself. The mind is the enemy as well as the friend of the conditioned soul. So at present, everybody is walking around, you know, with their worst enemy inside, right? The mind is filled, in general, ordinary life. The mind is filled with all kinds of thoughts of sense gratification, fears, anxieties, aspirations. All of these things are there, and they're according to how we associate with the modes of nature, they impel us to act in one way or another. The lower self is controlling the higher self. The mind is also part of the lower self, right? The self is the Atma, and then below that is the intelligence, the mind, the senses. And if we allow the lower self, including the mind and the senses, to control us, then we're kind of held prisoner, and we don't even know it. We're being dragged around by our illusory thoughts and aspirations and fears and all these things. So yoga practice, any kind of yoga practice, involves reining in this mind and actually ultimately making it our friend. Making it our friend by training the mind to always think of Krishna, the Supreme. So one way is this technical aspect of the Ashtanga yoga practice. So here, in beginning in this text 11 here and going through 13 and 14, Krishna is going to give a nice little summary of some of the requirements. So the first one is Shucha Deshe, a sanctified land. Where is that? It's not San Diego, California. You know, all of these Western lands, or not just the Western lands, wherever there is a predominance of the influence of Kali Yuga, you see, you will find that everything becomes polluted. Not only does the air and the water become polluted, everyone knows about that, but also, most importantly, the ether becomes polluted with contaminated sound that's saturated with the modes of nature that controls everybody's consciousness, you see. So with Shucha Deshe, right away, we're disqualified. Where are we going to find that? That sanctified place. Asthiram asanam atmanam. One has to practice this firm sitting. This is what all of the hatha yoga is meant for, really. To strengthen the body so that you can sit without, you know, pains and circulation going off. And to really be able to sit so that you can practice this pranayama, the control of the breath, which also calms the mind, and ultimately this dharana and dhyana, like that. And the next verse, Krishna will talk about keeping the gaze on the tip of the nose. Well, it's literally nasikagra. Nasikagra means the beginning of the nose. Nose begins here and ends over here. In the Western lands, the tip of the nose is here, but actually the beginning is here. You'll see he talks about keeping the eyesight between the two eyebrows. So that'll come next. But let's just see. Let's look at all of these restrictions and see how practically inconceivable it is to really do that today, do this today. Prabhupada talks about this in the purport. So one has to be able to sit steady, not too high, not too low. You know, you're not going to be sitting in a tree. You don't want to be sitting in a ditch. You want to be sitting everything moderate, everything, you know, not too cold, not too hot. You know, like, and then tatra eka agram. You have to. The one-pointedness, the focus. Practically, people have forgotten how to do that in this age. There's so many distractions. From childhood, in the grade school, you know, attention deficit disorder. What is that? The inability to do exactly what Krishna recommends here, to focus on one point. And in the next verse will be that one point. It's Krishna in the heart. Make me the ultimate goal of life. But even to focus on anything has become difficult. So that's the manakritva, to calm. It has to be a calm, no distractions. That's the whole idea here. Getting away from distractions, going to the mountains, to the caves, you know, the jungles. But Prabhupada, he has a wonderful set of lectures called the Yoga System Tapes, where he talks on each one of these verses in the sixth chapter. I highly recommend it. It's very interesting. So we have to remember the history. Prabhupada, when he first came to America, he was staying in a yoga ashram. Dr. Mishra's place, right, up in New York City. So he got to witness the attempts to practice meditation. And he said, well, you have to keep your eyes half open. Otherwise, if you close the eyes, then you definitely begin sleeping. And then Prabhupada does his inimitable, you know, sound effect. It's right on the tape, and everybody laughs, you know. I mean, have you ever been in a yoga studio? It's like that. I've tried. It's very difficult, you know, to stay awake if everything is very quiet and the lights are down and you're just there with your own mind. It's very hard, you know. So that's one aspect. So Srila Prabhupada witnessed the difficulty of this kind of yoga. It's really just they're just playing at it. Yata chitendriya kriya. Now this is the key here. Yata, this word comes up again and again. It means to strive, to control. What does it say here? Yata chitta, controlling the mind. And the senses, indriya, kriya, and the activities. All of these things have to be under... If any one of them is out of control, then your meditation is broken, right? If even one of the senses that the mind fixes on can drag away the mind, just like the strong wind that drags away a boat on the water. This we have in the second chapter. So all of this has to be controlled. And ubhavishyasane, sitting on the seat, and yunjad, should execute yoga, atma vishuddhi. Now this word is very important. It's the whole purpose of it is for purification. It's for purification. Purification of what? Purification of the heart and the mind of anartas, you know, in general. Anartas, the things you don't want. Well, what don't you want? You know? Well, we know from the philosophy that we don't want all of this, you know, video of material desires coursing through our mind, right? We don't want all of these memories and these aspirations for future desires. Drishta shruta, it is said in by Kapila Dev. You become detached from all that you have seen directly and all of you heard about, the heavenly pleasures. All of that vairagya. This is a great result of real Krishna consciousness. So all of that's in the mind. Where else is it going to reside? So the mind has to be controlled and purified of these things. That's the key. That's the purpose here. Now this idea of purification, this is central to the practice of devotional service. The first understanding is that our nature, our constitutional position, you know, our swarup, is purity, is Krishna consciousness, is pure love for God. A whole different realm than we experience daily. That's within us. It's not something that has to be cultivated from outside. Nitya, Krishna, Siddha, Prem, Sadhya, Kabunoi. Shravanadi Shuddha Chitte Kadaya Hudoi. The same as Shuddha, purifying the consciousness. So Nitya Siddha Krishna Prem can be translated the eternal perfection of love for Krishna. Right? Sadhya Kabunoi. It's not something that has to be brought from outside. In this context, sadhya means something external. How do we discover it? If this is what we have, the Prabhupada compares it in the nectar of devotion. It may be there in the text of Bhakti Prasada Simha, I'm not sure. A child learns how to walk, right? Anyone who's had children, you know that at first a child, they can't walk. They can't even crawl, right? They're just lying there. And then at a certain point, they turn over on the belly, and it's a whole new world. They're crawling everywhere, right? They're mobile. They're discovering the world. And then there comes that point where the parents are always trying to get the kid to walk. They're walking and falling. The toddler means they're toddling. But at a certain point, they walk like anything. A whole new world. Now they can run here and there, right? The mother has to keep watch on them, right? Then later on, they get a bicycle. It broadens. But that ability to walk is innate. It's natural for the child at a certain age, certain period, right? It's not something that is artificial, certainly. And we all do it without even thinking. But at a certain point, none of us could walk. But it developed, right? It's natural. So Krishna consciousness is natural. The pure love for Krishna is natural to the soul. And how does it develop? Shravanadi shuddha chitte. By hearing, etc., the heart becomes purified. Of all those things which are superimposed on this pure love for Krishna and distorting it. We're experiencing this pure ladini shakti, right, which is pure love for Krishna and the pleasure that comes. But we're experiencing it in a distorted form. Prabhupada's famous perverted reflection. You know, instead of enjoying, like anything, serving Krishna and contacting him and reciprocating with him, we're trying to enjoy the reciprocation of the senses with their objects. That's the reflection. And being frustrated. Yeah, that causes pain and suffering. You know, and we know from experience. So, but the natural, original sarup is to be in love with Krishna and eternally engage in activities, lila, ever fresh. We're looking for that. So that comes about by purification. Very important concept. In the Shikshastika Cheto Darpana Marjanam. Marjana means cleaning. We sing also about the spiritual message, cleaning the temple, right? So understanding that, it's very difficult because we're identifying with the contaminated mind. We're thinking, this is me. I'm a depressed person. That's just who I am. You know, everything looks bleak and black to me. Right? Have you known people like that? I was depressed, not seriously, but when I was a kid. The whole world, you know, nothing is, you can't, it's kind of the mode of ignorance. You know, but it's unnatural. You're not a depressed person. You've associated with the mode of ignorance or whatever it is, and that's a temporary state. If you identify it with it, then you just perpetuate it. So Krishna consciousness, the chanting of the holy name, especially foremost, purifies you, and naturally, prasanna chetasa, yashu, quickly you become naturally joyful. You see, purification. So this is also an attempt for that by a different means, by literally, you know, the technical aspect, controlling the asana, the sitting, controlling the breath, controlling the sense, and controlling the mind. All of this is, you know, by the will of the practitioner. Not easy, practically impossible in our state. What is it? What is our state? Prayanalpaya shaksavya. Kalavasmin yugejana. Manda, so manda matayo, manda bhagya yupabhirataha. First of all, we don't live very long. You read about these great yogis from the Satya Yuga and other yugas. You know, thousands of years they meditate. You know, hundreds of years, 15 minutes? No. You know, it takes, you know, so many years in order to become completely pure. And even then, there's some impurities because the yogis become very powerful. You know, becoming very powerful and rich, you know, and all these things is not good for bhakti. That's an anartha in and of itself. These siddhis or powers that the yogis get, they're distractions. Krishna talks about that in the Uddhava Gita. There's a chapter on yogic siddhis. At the end of the chapter, he says, those who are wise don't try for the siddhis. You know, he says, okay, you want the siddhis? Then you get the siddhi. How do you, suppose you want anima siddhi. Anima siddhi is being very small. Prabhupada mentioned, you know, he experienced. Did you ever hear this story? When he was, maybe he heard it, but, you know, this is a real historical event. Maybe it was Calcutta. And these yogis, you know, this was during the British Raj, and the yogis would sometimes come down from the hills, maybe it was Delhi, and he's walking around in Delhi and getting naked. You know, they were naked. This is, a lot of the yogis, they don't wear clothes, just like Shukadeva Goswami. So this, you can't have that. You know, this is British India, you know. So they arrested him. They put him in prison, you know. And the next thing you know, he's walking on the street again. What happened? We put him into prison again. His small anima siddhi is getting out through the keyhole. What are you going to do? Okay, let him walk, you know. He's walking. He had the siddhi. And Prapti siddhi, Prabhupada witnessed this himself. Because, you know, Prabhupada's father, Gormohan Day, he was very pious, you know, so he would allow any yogis or sadhus to come and come into his home. He would feed them and honor them, you know. So one of these yogis came, and in Prabhupada's presence, he was a child at that time. He said, okay, what do you want? You know, I can get you whatever you want. He said, okay, we want pomegranate from Kashmir. Apparently that's famous for growing nice pomegranates. So he, I don't know if he went into meditation or whatever, but he said, okay, go in the other room. And he opened the door, and the other room was a freshly broken branch of a pomegranate tree with a nice fresh pomegranate on. Prapti siddhi. You know, get whatever you want. So you can imagine, right away the wheels are turning. He said, okay, you know, here's Fort Knox. We'll get this, and then we'll help the temple, right? Maybe we should get those cities. But the problem is that when you get the siddhis, the temptation is there to use it for your own aggrandizement. Like Durvasa Muni, very powerful yogi, but he was proud of his powers, and he couldn't stand all the honor that Ambarish Maharaj was getting. He was just a simple bhakta, Savaimana Krishna, he was completely engaged in Krishna consciousness. But after all, he was a king. So the Brahmins, Durvasa, felt that the king should be honoring him. Why should he get all the honor? So the story, he arranged for Ambarish to commit a so-called offense against Durvasa, like tomorrow's Dvadasi. So there's a certain interval when you're supposed to break the fast. We take it somewhat seriously. Okay, it's usually during breakfast time. But Ambarish took it very seriously. And he was fasting from everything, so it was a question of breaking the fast with water. He could break the fast just with water. But that's like not eating. That's still like fast. So the idea is that Durvasa Muni, he arranged that he would come just before the time that you break the fast. And like a perfect Brahmin, a perfect Kshatriya, he invited him to partake of the fast and break the feast along with him. So he said, sure, I'd love to. But I have to take a bath first. This is what you do. You travel and you take a bath before taking prasad. So he went to take a bath, but he purposely stayed in the water so that the time for breaking the fast was expiring. Now is the dilemma. Because it's a great offense if you have a guest to eat before the guest. You may eat with the guest or after the guest, but you can't eat before the guest. That's an offense. So, but what to do? He didn't want to offend Lord Hari. He just practiced Ekadashi. You have to break it in the interval. It was expiring. So he consulted his Brahmins who didn't have a good idea. He said, I have an idea. I'll drink some water. Water is breaking fast and also it's not eating. Who could be offended if you take some water, So Durvasa, he knew by his mystic powers, he came out of his bath that Ambarish had broken a fast. He'd eaten before his guest. He took it as a great offense. Creates this big demoness to burn up Ambarish, but Ambarish is protected. He doesn't flinch. He says, if it's Krishna's will, let me burn to ashes. This is advancement. And so the chakra came, destroyed that demoness, fiery blazing demoness, and then went after Durvasa. Durvasa wasn't so advanced. What a great opportunity to be killed by the chakra of Krishna. You get liberation. No. He's afraid. He's terrified. He runs off, right? Runs to Shiva, runs to Brahma, they say, we can't help you. It goes all the way to Vaikuntha, and Narayan says, I can't help you. What is that famous verse? Pradadino. I'm controlled by my bhaktas. I'm not independent. You have to go down to Ambarish and beg his forgiveness, which he did, and he was saved. So this is an example of how yoga can also make you very proud if you get into the siddhis. So there's a danger there. Anyway, the whole idea is vishuddhiye, or purification. We have the principle in this stage, as Prabhupada gave us, nicely quoted from Brihadaranyaka Purana. Harinama, harinama, harinama kevalam. If you want to achieve the supreme goal of life in this age, when dissension and chaos abound, there is no other way. There is no other way. There is no other way that can never be found. But to chant Krishna's name with a stout-hearted vow, and to pray, O Lord Krishna, O friend of the poor, that my head ever unto your lotus feet bow. A little poem I put into a poem. So the idea is that what was achieved in the Satya Yuga by meditation, in the Treta Yuga by elaborate sacrifices, in the Dwapara Yuga by elaborate deity worship, same thing is achieved in this age by the chanting of the holy name. And in fact, we find, by the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that it's even a greater achievement. Because, if you achieve the perfection of meditation, okay, you'll go maybe to Vaikuntha. But you rarely see the Satya Yuga meditation after all of this, that they're going to Goloka Vrindavan to be engaged in Krishna as a friend, as a parent, or as an intimate lover. So in this age, it's even better. And why? There's a nice realization that I had once about this. Because what's the real mood that we have to be in to achieve perfection here? Not that we have to be great yogis, but Trinada Bisunichena, right? We have to be more humble than a blade of grass, tolerant as a tree, to really feel all the honor belongs to others and none belongs to ourselves. In this mood, you can chant the holy name constantly. Why? Because you feel completely dependent and desperate for Krishna's protection, which is really how we are. Now, suppose we had bodies that lived for, 50,000, 60,000 years, that we could fly through the sky, that we had cities automatically, or all of these different things, So how are you going to feel like you're more humble than a blade of grass? This is why the heavenly planet is not so great for Shuddha Bhakti. The gardens are there. You can enjoy with the nymphs for, 100,000 years. Your body never grows old, No, bad smells. It's a big thing. How are you going to? Then how do you feel all so desperate? You see, for Krishna's help, you're a demigod. You see the problem. So in one sense, this is the best age. This is the best, especially because Lord Chaitanya has just come, and that's very rare. He comes only once after Krishna comes, once in a day of Brahma. So therefore, it's said in the 11th canto, after the famous verse describing Lord Chaitanya's avatar. What is it? The fasting makes my brain work slower. Trisha Krishnam? How does the first speak? Krishnavarnam Trisha Krishnam. Thank you. Krishnavarnam Trisha Krishnam Sangopangastra Parshadam Yagyar Sankhtana Prayajanti Sumedisha. That in this age of Kali, the Yuga avatar comes as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He's speaking the syllables Krishna, 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 Krishna. The varnam can be syllables. His complexion is golden, not blackish, Trisha Akrishnam. And he's there with his intimate associates, the Sa-Anga, the Upa-Anga, the Astra, and the Parshada. So the Anga are like Lord Nityananda and Advaita, very close. The Parshadas, intimate associates like Subdhamana, like that. His weapons, the holy names, and also his beauty. And those who are intelligent, Sumedasa, will worship him, perform sacrifice, chiefly by Sankirtan, congregational chanting of the holy name. So right after that verse, or one or two after, it describes this Kali Yuga, how fortunate we are. Kaling sabaji yantyaya guna gya sara bhaginaha yatra sangitane aiva sarva swarto abhilabhyate. So those who are intelligent, who are Aryans, they know the value of things, and they can get the essence, sarabhagina, they worship this Kali Yuga. Kali Yuga, where everyone's disturbed and, misguided. Yes. Why? Because in this age, just by the practice of Sankirtan, all of your innermost desires can be filled. Your real svarta, the need of the soul. In other words, the need of the soul to connect back with Krishna. Just by Sankirtan. Such an easy process. Getting together, talking about Krishna, hearing from Shastra, and chanting his holy name. It doesn't have to be a sacred place, right here in the middle of San Diego. Maybe some of us may be sitting a little too high, a little too low. It's okay. There's no deer skin. Nobody's practicing pranayama. But if you just do this one practice, you can achieve all perfection, even greater than the previous yoga. So that's... But still, there's a very important instruction here. Maybe not these technical aspects of Ashtanga Yoga, but very important instruction on focusing the mind, self-control, and my favorite portion of this chapter, the description of one in Samadhi and how Prabhupada relates it all to Krishna consciousness. This will be in text 20 and 23. We'll come on that maybe later this week. Any discussion on these verses? Yes, Bhishma Dev Prabhu. Yeah.
Joined to Vaikuntha?
Yes.
Was that by mystic cities or was that by just the Lord?
Well, because it seems like how did he get in?
Yeah.
Because he's not really a devotee. Just like the four Kumaras couldn't get in, right? Until they weren't actually devotees yet, right? The only thing we can assume, I haven't read that passage in a while, or maybe something in the commentaries, that this was a special arrangement of Narayan to show the glories of his own devotees, And so he taught us, by that process, that he himself, amazing, verses there about Aham bhakta paradino, that's the first line. Nasva tantra, I'm not independent. I'm you know, being controlled by my devotees, by their intense love. This is Krishna's voluntary, puts himself under the control of his devotees, just like Mother Yashoda can bind up Krishna, you know. So Durvasa was a perfect foil for that, you know, like a person in a play or in a drama that brings out the qualities of the hero, you know. So his relation to Ambarish, and he required that scene where he even, you know, even Narayan can't help you. You have to get the mercy of the pure devotee. That's where bhakti will come from. And that's where deliverance will come from. Yeah.
Is where Vishnu is in the Garbhodakshaya Vishnu in the causal ocean?
Yeah, what about it?
Is that not in Vaikuntha?
No. He's outside of Vaikuntha. Yeah, this Purusha avatars are expansions of Krishna.
Yeah, because I think that's what I heard when I heard that story first, was that he didn't go to Vaikuntha.
He went to Garbhodakshaya Vishnu?
Yeah.
I didn't hear that. I mean, I don't remember reading that in Bhagavatam. He seems to be talking to Narayan there. Yeah.
And then the other thing I was wondering, do they chant the Maha Mantra in other yugas too? Can they achieve the same thing in those?
Yes, the Maha Mantra is eternal. It's not. But like I said, there's different dharmas for different yugas, yuga dharma, and. It's just like that. There is chanting of Hare Krishna going on, but this it's not as featured. It's not as emphasized, you know, because there's these other processes and people are capable of doing these other things. They're not so much control. You know, there's not so much the mode of passion and mode of ignorance are not as prominent in these previous ages. So naturally, you know, people take up this process of. Ashtanga yoga or meditation, meditative yoga. That's what is, you know, it's what is featured in that age. So, but this age, there's this special benediction, you know, because Lord Chaitanya featured it, that he gave this, that just by chanting this holy name, we can be delivered. And part of it is, as I explained, because we're so low to begin with. There's no question of meditating like they do in Satya Yuga. It's not even possible for us. So what's our qualification? Is that we're so bereft, we're so dina, you know, we're so wretched that we can really call out with absolute desperation to the holy name. You see? The first should be last should be first. It's in the Bible. It's like that. Trinada, you know, if you really feel yourself to be hopeless and helpless, that's a great qualification for calling out the holy name. Where this is explained by Kunti, you know, when she has her verse prayers, Janmaishraya Shuta Shibir, Edamana Balakpanan, Puman, Naivar Hatabidhatam Vai, Tvarma Kinchana Gochadam. That word abhidhatam means to address, right? That's addressing Krishna, calling out the Krishna. So here she says, Naivar Hat, that if one is too much intoxicated with good birth, with beauty, wealth, or knowledge, you know, these are general categories of opulence, then one cannot call out from the bottom of your heart, the Krishna, because he's a kinchana gochana. He's the property of the propertyless. So in these other ages, there were these natural, people felt they had all this property. I mean, not maybe physical property, but you know, well, imagine having a body that lives for thousands of years like that. What a boon, you know. People spend thousands of dollars just to look a little younger with Botox or something. And they really had it, you know. So that's how we turn the disadvantage of Kali Yuga into the greatest advantage by feeling ourselves lowly and helpless and without Krishna's protection. And that's why you find the greatest devotees, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Narottam Das, all of them, you know, they have these songs in which they paint a very bleak picture of their own condition, and they have no hope unless you lift me up, right? Ha handa handa bhadamadu, what is it? I was doing this verse. Sangsada dukkha jalado patitasya kama kodadi nakkamakadaya kavalikutasya. In Prabodhananda Saraswati, praying to Lord Chaitanya, he has a chapter in his Chandramita where the author laments his pitiable condition. This is Prabodhananda Saraswati, a personal associate of Lord Chaitanya, not Lord Chaitanya, Gopabhata Goswami. And maybe he saw Lord, he saw Lord Chaitanya, of course. He was the uncle there when Lord Chaitanya went on his tour. And, you know, extremely exalted. And he's really painting a picture of himself as helpless. He says, I've fallen into this ocean of samsara, and I'm being devoured by the timangila fish and the sharks of lust, anger, greed, etc. And I'm bound up hand and foot. Just see the picture. Well, maybe I'll swim away from the fish. No, you're bound up hand and foot by my wicked desires and hypocrisy and all of these things. What am I going to do? My dear Lord Chaitanya, please give me the boat of your lotus feet. Lift me up. You know, really feel that mood, then naturally the Lord responds to that kind of call. So that's a great advantage here. You were going to say?
I just found this in Bhagavatam, Ninth Canto. Thereafter, being disappointed, even in taking shelter of Lord Shiva, Durvasa Muni went to Vaikuntha Dham, where the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayana, resides with his consort, the Goddess of Fortune.
That's the way I always remember it. We'll look at the Sanskrit later. We'll see what it says. Yeah. All right, we have time to read one more. This is the, actually two more. This is the next two verses about this process. Samam kayashit ogrivam dharyam achalam stidaha samprekshya nasikagram svam dishischa navalokayan prashantatma vikatabhir brahmachari vratestitaha manak sangyamya matchitto yukta asita matparaha. One should hold one's body, neck, and head erect in a straight line and stare steadily at the tip of the nose. Thus, with an unagitated, subdued mind, devoid of fear, completely free from sex life, one should meditate upon me within the heart and make me the ultimate goal of life. The goal of life is to know Krishna, who is situated within the heart of every living being as the Paramatma, the four-handed Vishnu form. The yoga process is practiced in order to discover and see this localized form of Vishnu, and not for any other purpose. The localized Vishnu Murti is the plenary representation of Krishna dwelling within one's heart. One who has no program to realize this Vishnu Murti is uselessly engaged in mock yoga practice and is certainly wasting his time. Krishna is the ultimate goal of life, and the Vishnu Murti situated in one's heart is the object of yoga practice. To realize this Vishnu Murti within the heart, one has to observe complete abstinence from sex life. Therefore, one has to leave home and live alone in a secluded place, remaining seated as mentioned above. One cannot enjoy sex life daily at home or elsewhere and attend a so-called yoga class and thus become a yogi. One has to practice controlling the mind and avoiding all kinds of sense gratification, of which sex life is the chief. In the rules of celibacy written by the great sage Yajnavalkya, it is said, karmana manasa vacha sarvavastasu sarvada sarvatra maitruna tyago brahmacharyam prachakshate. The vow of brahmacharya is meant to help one completely abstain from sex indulgence in work, words, and mind, at all times, under all circumstances, and in all places. No one can perform correct yoga practice through sex indulgence. Brahmacharya is taught, therefore, from childhood when one has no knowledge of sex life. Children at the age of 5 are sent to the Guru Kula, or the place of the spiritual master, and the master trains the young boys in the strict discipline of becoming brahmacharis. Without such practice, no one can make advancement in any yoga, whether it be dhyana, or bhakti. One who, however, follows the rules and regulations of married life, having a sexual relationship only with his wife, and that also under regulation, is also called a brahmachari. Such a restrained household of brahmachari may be accepted in the bhakti school, but the jnana and dhyana schools do not even admit household of brahmacharis. They require complete abstinence without compromise. In the bhakti school, a householder brahmachari is allowed controlled sex life because the cult or culture of bhakti yoga is so powerful that one automatically loses sexual attraction, being engaged in the superior service of the Lord. In the Bhagavad Gita 259, it is said, whereas others are forced to restrain themselves from sense gratification, a devotee of the Lord automatically refrains because of superior taste. Other than the devotee, no one has any information of that superior taste. Vigata B, this is within the verse, without fear. One cannot be fearless unless one is fully in Krishna consciousness. A conditioned soul is fearful due to his perverted memory, his forgetfulness of his eternal relationship with Krishna. The Bhagavatam 11.237 says, Krishna consciousness is the only basis for fearlessness. Therefore, perfect practice is possible for a person who is Krishna conscious. And since the ultimate goal of yoga practice is to see the Lord within, a Krishna conscious person is already the best of all yogis. The principles of the yoga system mentioned herein are different from those of the popular so-called yoga societies. And I'm going to look at the original transcript and see if the word yoga is there between the word perfect and practice in that last, second to last sentence. It seems like we need the perfect yoga practice. In any case, very interesting two verses here. The key is, Prabhupada brings it out in his lectures, which I highly recommend. You have them on your iPod. Put those on there. The yoga system. I put on the right part. Matchito yukta matparaha. This word matparaha comes in various forms throughout the shastra that we have, which means making Krishna, Krishna speaking, so he's making me the ultimate goal of life. That's the key. Yoga that's practiced for any other purpose is not yoga according to Krishna, right? It has to be matparaha. So all of this other stuff, keeping the neck, everything straight, the head, neck, and back, and renouncing the opposite sense gratification, looking between the eyebrows, all of this is simply a technique to help you focus the mind on Krishna. In this case, Krishna within the heart. Generally meditate within the heart. So if you have a process of doing that without all of this, that you can practice even in the middle of a big city, even while walking or even sleeping, why not do it? In other words, why go to all this trouble if you have an easier practice? Prabhupada compares it to, the yoga ladder, or in the case, the escalator or elevator. Bhakti yoga takes you immediately to the top floor. Absorption in Krishna. These other yogas, you take the stairway, And if you can't get to the top, then you're known by that. Oh, he's a jnana yogi, dhyana yogi, or a karma yogi, or whatever. I'm a raja yogi, But bhakti is the end of the whole thing. The whole point is matparaha, matchitta. One has to focus the mind on Krishna. So this process, centered on the chanting of the holy name, is practical yoga, dynamic yoga that anyone can practice in any age. There's no prerequisites. See, there's all of this stuff is called purashcharya. Sitting and practicing yam niyam, You're not really practicing till you the real yoga, till you get the concentration. And then dhyan, it's the second to last, that's the seventh process. What about all this other stuff? Oh, that's preliminary, you have to do it. But everyone can chant from day one. You don't have to be pure, you don't have to follow the four regular principles to chant. Anyone can chant. You have to follow the four if you want to advance in the chanting, but everyone can begin the process, in any state, clean or unclean, And the process itself is so powerful, and that Prabhupada makes the point here about control, brahmachari. Well, it's so powerful a process that even householders, under regulation, then they can also make advancement. Even regulated sex life, Krishna says, right in the seventh chapter, right? Dharma-viruddha-bhuteshu, kamo-smi-bhadadarshan. I'm sex life that's not against regulated principles. So, but in the other process, no. Here, there's no question of anything. It's Ashtanga yoga practice. So, there's a nice verse, which we'll end with here, from the Kumara's teachings to Maharaj Prithu. Prabhupada would quote this verse. Yat pada pankaja palasya vilasa bhaktya karmashayam kvatita mudgata yanti santa tadvan na rikta matayo yata yopi ruddha sroto ganastavanadam vajabhasadeva. So here he says that the santas, the saints, the devotees, they're experiencing a taste by serving the tips of the toes of the lotus feet of Krishna. Constantly, that taste is there in the heart. And because of that, the heart is the knots in the heart are cut. What does it say? The lots of bhaktya, karmashayam. Karmashayam means the aspirations for fruit of activity. You know, all its varieties. They're called knots, kvatitam. But those gratitama udgratayanti, they're untied or cut by the santas. In other words, you lose the desire for all of this, you know, phantasmagoria of sense gratification. But others who are not devotees, the jnanis and the yogis, although they may control for some time, ultimately they're overwhelmed by those desires in the heart because they're not being cleansed. Jnana yoga or even dhyana yoga, which isn't meditating on Krishna, is not really cleansing the heart. And therefore, this is near the end of his instructions to Prithu. He says, therefore, bhaja Vasudevam. Everyone knows what that means? Worship Vasudev, worship Krishna. Yeah. Prithu was already a great devotee. He's teaching us. So this is the great advantage of the bhakti yogis. From day one, the purification begins. The very process you do in day one, you do eternally. It's just that you perfect the process by chanting purely, by giving up all the offenses. You see, there's still a process. There's a marga. You see, but it's such a powerful process that there's no prerequisite. The dog eaters of the Kali Yuga, you know, or the cow eaters of the Kali Yuga, it's even worse, can take part in the process and become purified. Whereas others, oh, you're not celibate? Forget it. You can't join the mat. Can't do anything. You can see the broad scope of bhakti yoga. Is it truly for everyone? Because Krishna claims everyone as his. Yeah. Sorry, we ran out of time. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.